It's what date? It's 98.05.23. We are at Wolfshagenhütten, Hoopen Resistance. And, okay, tell me your name.
Rowan Tilly.
I would like you to talk a little bit about the issue about bullying between activists and your experiences. So you can just you can give some examples in the beginning.
Okay. Well, I think probably the easiest way to explain it is to just tell the story of how how this particular situation developed, because otherwise you don't get the context of it.
And cool.
I suppose it started with me wanting to be involved with Seeds of Hope Ploughshares, because I wanted to look at the methods that ploughshares use and see how applicable they are for the environmental movement. So that was my agenda. And after the action, because of the acquittal and the big media attention, for the first time in Britain, ploughshares is being talked about much more widely. And a lot of activists hadn't heard of it before, and they were excited about it, primarily because of the huge amount of damage that was done and because of acquittal. But mostly they get excited about the damage. I perceive that to be a macho thing, you know, that it was big damage and therefore big action, you know. So in a way the situation was ripe for me to be able to talk about the way the action was done. So that's what I started doing. And the first opportunity I had to do this was that I was invited to give a speech at a big action in Newbury that was being organised by Friends of the Earth jointly with the more anarchist environmental movement, because they developed a very good relationship through the Newbury anti-road campaign. And I decided to talk about accountability, and rather than just talking about it, I decided to give an example of what openness and accountability was by actually doing an action there. But because it was being organised partly by Friends of the Earth, I knew it would be an issue for them, so I asked them whether they would mind me doing this. And of course it was a big issue for them, so they talked about it for a long time and decided that because of the kind of action it was, they'd say yes, which is quite a big thing for them to agree to. And I also checked with the grassroots organiser whether it would be likely to get tangled up in other actions. And he said that there'd been 2 days set aside before that day for more anarchist, covert actions to take place, so that my action should, as far as I could see, it would be a safe thing to do on that day. So I gave my speech and I openly cut a fence, cut some fence, and was arrested for it. And whilst I was being held in the cell, I heard that there'd been a big fire, and lots of activists had burnt down buildings and machinery, causing £300,000 worth of damage. And it caused a huge problem in the environmental movement. After a long time of building up a good relationship with Friends of the Earth, it caused a rift, so that Friends of the Earth were put in a situation where they had to condemn what had happened. And that made the environmentalists very angry. And what happened to me was that a few days later, I phoned up the court to see if I could make my plea by post, my plea of not guilty. And they said, oh no, you can't, because you're being charged with £300,000 worth of damage. So, saying that I was going to be charged with the fire damage. So I didn't take it very seriously, because I just thought, well, that's probably, they're trying to frighten me, or, you know, it's never going to stand up in court. But I was also very angry, because I thought that if that had happened to somebody who was less experienced, they would have been so frightened that they may never have taken action again. And also because I heard of other people who'd done actions on that day, who'd been blamed for things that they hadn't done and been arrested and held, and they'd never been arrested before, they weren't used to it, they weren't prepared for it, and they'd had bad experiences. So I was very angry. There was a meeting between Friends of the Earth and the Earth First activists to look at what had happened. And during that meeting, I became angry, basically, and said something that I probably shouldn't have said, which was that I felt that the people that had set fire to the machines had behaved like agents provocateurs because they'd created a split in the movement, and that that's exactly the kind of thing that agents provocateurs do, and that it was a really foolish thing to do. And I'd also told some people that I'd been blamed for the damage. And their response to that was, bad luck, that's unfortunate. And I had, was given no support. And people condemned me for saying that the people that had used the fire had behaved like agents provocateurs. And I was sort of isolated. Not long after that, I managed to form an affinity group of people who wanted to do something like a franchise action. And I did get a bit of support from those people. And I felt strong enough to go to a gathering, the Earth First National Gathering. And what I wanted to do was try and unpick what had happened and try and have a really constructive discussion about the pros and cons of accountability. And I wanted to apologise for being angry and saying what I'd said, but to explain why I'd been angry and be able to then move into a discussion about what had happened in a more constructive way. I was told that there would be a debate, and people wanted me to take part in this debate, so I started preparing for it and I wrote a discussion paper. And at first I was going to write it in what I call Earth First speak, eco-babble, which is using the terminology and the language that Earth First people use to try and make it accessible to them. And then I decided not to do that because it felt exclusive. I find the terminology exclusive, so I just wrote it in my normal way and produced it as a discussion paper, which was probably not a very good thing to do culturally because I wasn't doing it in their terms, I was doing it in my terms. And people criticised me for giving the discussion paper out and said that I had no right to hand out discussion papers about accountability. And I was told that the debate wasn't going to happen, after all. I felt more and more isolated. People wouldn't sit with me. And this is the bit that's confidential. I even felt my own group found it difficult to sit with me and support me, and I even felt isolated by them. I knew that they weren't... If I asked them directly, they'd say, oh yes, we support you, but they weren't actually doing very much to be sort of behind me. And I'd sit down somewhere and people would move away. And
how did you feel about your own group?
Develop that a little bit. Yeah, I was really upset. I was confused, really. I wasn't sure whether it was my paranoia at first. I thought, that I'd go and talk to them and then they'd talk with me if I did it in a very direct way. But then they'd move away quite quickly. And I think, well, I'm just imagining it. You know, they've got other people to talk to, and you know, I'm just, it's not, it's just my paranoia. But I just felt really alone. And yeah, I felt that I couldn't go to them and say, look, I feel alone. I feel like, you know, people are against me, and I want more support from you, because I don't know, I just, partly because I felt that I'd handled the situation badly from the beginning, because I'd been angry, and I'd, you know, I'd made this thing, statement about Agent Provocateurs, and I felt that was my fault, and I felt like, in a way, that was my own mess, and I should sort it out myself. But now, I mean, in retrospect, I think that it, you know, I think they should have, they could have been more sensitive, and they could have made it, they know that I'm having a difficult time, and I think they could do much more to support me. And I mean, what I've found since that time is that I tiptoe around all the time. I'm really, really careful about what I say. I'm careful about my behaviour. I police myself massively, and it's really hard work. And I think if they gave me more support, I'd be able to sort of handle myself better. But because they don't give me support, they just makes me it just makes me have to sort of rely on my own resources more and more. For example, I mean, I gave a speech at Hammers and Spanners, which is a gathering, a recent gathering, where we were trying to look at this, we were trying to have this debate, basically, about accountability and covertness. And, yeah, we knew that some controversial issues were going to come out. And I made a speech at the beginning that was, and I was very careful about what I said. But even though I policed everything, people still said that my manner was slightly patronising. So I still haven't sorted it out. And I think, well, how could I have sorted it out? And I think that the best way would have been if my group had given me more backup, you know, and had talked through things with me, instead of just finding me a difficult person to be seen with, you know, partly because our group operates in secret. Nobody ever sees me with a group of people, you know, so they don't know that I've got friends, so that makes me feel even more isolated, because the people who are hostile towards me think that I'm just one person, and I don't see that there's a group of people.
Could you just briefly mention different things which happened?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. One thing that happened at the Earth First gathering, this is this one where I was feeling very isolated. There was a big group discussion, and there was about 200 people. And small group discussions had already taken place, and then everybody had come back, and there was this plenary, but it was 200 people all trying to get their say. And somebody had said something about, I think, I can't remember what had happened there. Anyway, I brought up the subject of something had come up about accountability. I think somebody else had said something, and I think I said something about people going to prison. Can't even remember what I said now. But someone else who was hostile towards me made a remark about how people who make themselves vulnerable or who go to prison, you know, being, you know, people who think that they can change things by doing that, you know, that's really stupid. And he ridiculed that as a way of doing things. And somebody else who's hostile towards me from across the room laughed very loudly to try and, you know, encourage other people to laugh, and then everybody started laughing. So I was ridiculed in front of everybody. Sure. And that was, I found that very painful.
Sure.
I think ridicule is a very, very effective way of putting people down.
Sure.
Yeah, it was very painful and very sort of isolating.
Sure. Go on, if you remember. You talked about an article you tried to, or the title written to a magazine, and they have turned you down, maybe.
Oh, yes, yes.
Or other things.
There was an article that I wrote for the... Oh, no, actually, it was this discussion paper that I'd prepared about accountability. I approached... there's a magazine that's produced once a year by Earth First, and it's called Do or Die. And I approached the editors of that and said, why would you like to publish this? Or anything else about these kind of ideas, and they said they'd look at it, and then at the end of the day they said that there wasn't any space.
Hmm.
And I know that somebody else from my group actually had written something as well, and his article wasn't published. And then we also wanted to put something about hammers and spanners, and that was also rejected. So it feels like there's some censorship going on. But again, I don't know whether that's really true.
Mm.
I don't know whether it's my paranoia.
Yeah.
Or whether that's really...
Do you have other examples?
In
your private life or in the moment, whatever.
Yep. There's one woman in particular who's been particularly hostile towards me, who's active in the same campaign as me. She works very closely with my partner and with other close friends of mine. I can't get away from her. If I want to go out with my friends, she's always there, and she won't speak to me. I've approached her 3 times to try and resolve our conflict, and she's every time she said, no, I don't want to talk about anything. I've got nothing to say to you. So I'm blocked from resolving it with her. And I find it very difficult to be with her socially when I can't resolve things. So I end up in these social situations not being able to speak. I feel intimidated by her, so I can't relax, I can't enjoy myself in her company and so on. And it also sort of drives a wedge between me and my group, because some of my group are good friends with her. So it raises a question about loyalty, I suppose. They feel compromised, I think, in their loyalty, and I think they feel awkward because they probably want to support me, but they find it awkward because they're also friends with her. She's a very powerful person. She's very key in the movement. She has a lot of recognition and authority. And I have a lot of respect for her as well. She's a very good worker. And so, you know.
Does anyone interfere in this kind of situation?
No.
You're kind of totally alone, or...?
I think so, yeah. Mm. I mean, once or twice people have said, oh, this is impossible when you and Jackie are in the same room together, you know. I'm going to try and talk to Jackie and see if something can be done about it. But then they don't do it. Then I said, oh, did you say anything? And they said, oh, no, I haven't had time.
So they talk with you privately to give you some words of support, but they don't interfere with the situation.
They don't try and change it.
What do I think about that?
I think it would be good if they did intervene, because I've done everything that I can. I've made my own approaches personally, and it's very clear that it's affecting everybody. It's not just affecting me anymore. It affects people in my group. It affects my partner. It's, you know, when it gets to a point where one person can't do anything anymore because they've been turned down, as I've been turned down, there's nothing else for it then but for other people to step in and try and make it, you know, get the issue addressed. I also feel that I can't take part in actions, so I don't. I'm stopped from doing direct action because I don't feel safe.
Do you think your friends or people who is in this situation are responsible to interfere somehow? Or to the is it a choice or is it?
I think it's a choice. Yeah. I mean, if I was in that situation, I'd want to intervene. I'd think that I don't know. Yeah. I don't think it would be my responsibility to intervene, but I think I'd choose to do that. I don't know about responsibility. I'm not sure.
Okay, do you have other samples about what have happened?
Let's see. Yep, there was a person in Brighton who's been hostile. Well, most of the hostility is actually centred in my hometown. Unfortunately, a lot of the people that don't like me are from there. And I've only just recently moved there, and I've been trying to get involved with local things. And I approached one person and said, oh, you know, I'd like to join the local group and get involved with things. And he said, oh, well, we have an action planned, but it's secret, and you can't be involved. And I said, oh, well, maybe I can't be involved with the planning, but perhaps you could tell me about when you do it, and then I can be involved just on the day or something. And he said, oh, well, yeah, maybe we could do that, and I'll phone you up about it. And I offered to give him my phone number, and he said he already had it, which surprised me because I hadn't given it to him before. And he didn't phone me. So, and since then, I talked to somebody else about it, and that person then went to him and asked whether I, you know, must have asked about the situation. And he said, oh, well, we've now decided that our group is going to be an exclusive group, which he hadn't said before. So, but at least that's a more open way of. He hasn't told me that it's an exclusive group, I just heard it via another person.
So, what words would you use to interpret these situations you are talking about?
Well, it feels like bullying. Because, I mean, you know, you can say, well, bullying is about when people physically are violent to you, but I think if you look at what happens in schools when children are bullied, a lot of it is about isolating people and intimidating them without even making any physical contact, just by having peer groups, you know, and all. It's like being at school, you know. There are different groups of allegiances, and I'm excluded from all of them. So I, you know, I'm constantly finding myself standing alone.
Have you been beaten physically in your childhood or any time? You don't need to say if you have.
No, never been bullied.
Not bullied. I mean beaten. You know, in a fight.
No, never been physically beaten.
What are you most afraid of? You know, if you look at your fear, like being beaten physically or being bullied like this, you know.
No, being isolated. The thing that I find most difficult about this is that a lot of it is hidden, and a lot of it I can't distinguish between my paranoia and what's really happening, and that makes it very difficult to get a handle on it and what's really happening, what's the truth of this situation, you know. It's very difficult to get any clarity on it, so I'm constantly thrown back on myself, you know, thinking, oh well, you know, it depends on my mood, you know. Sometimes I feel, yes, I am being bullied, and you know, something should be done about it. And other times I just think, oh, I'm paranoid and it's just my own hang-ups or something.
So if you compare with prison, what would be worse? This kind of punishment or prison for you?
Well, I've never been to prison, so I don't know what prison would be like.
What about your fears? Will you fear prison more, or this kind of...
I'm beginning to feel as though this is a worse situation, but it's difficult to know whether that's true or not.
You know, you start with to talk about your activism and one action you did and what happened after that. Would you regard this as a kind of a punishment for what you have done and what you think in your activism?
Yeah, I think it is like a punishment. Yeah.
Could you say like that? This kind of punishment is something which we might need to prepare for after our actions.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, but I don't know. It's difficult to know how to prepare for it because and it's so difficult to even make my own group understand what I've been going through.
So okay, let's think about what to do about this situation, you know. Before it happens or when it have happens. Can you give an idea? It doesn't have to be the solution, but some thoughts.
I think probably the biggest reason for me being in this situation was that I hadn't been very, very much involved with the movement before that incident happened. So it was almost like I came... From their point of view, I came out of the peace movement, did this one action, and they've rejected me. Whereas if I'd already been doing actions, I would already have known people in the movement, and people might have felt more confident about taking my side, you know, or taking up my arguments. I suppose it's been easier for them to isolate me. I mean, actually, I've been involved with the environmental movement for years, but I haven't been involved with direct action for about 2 years. And because the environmental movement is very short, has a very fast turnover, a lot of the people in the movement now wouldn't have known me from that time. So they just see me as a new person. When in fact, I'm probably more experienced than they are. So.
Okay. Other ideas how to deal with this?
So,
from other people, or like from the people who is watching, or from your group, or from you, just any thoughts?
Well, I found it very helpful talking to people here at Open Resistance because, I've heard about your experiences and a little bit about Wolfgang's experiences, and Wolfgang said to me that he thought being bullied was much worse than going to prison. And he's had both experiences. And that really made me stop and think, you know, because it just felt like the first time I'd had any recognition, serious recognition for what's been happening.
When did you talk with him?
Couple of days ago.
Okay.
So it's really made me think about what am I going to do now, and what to say to my own group. The thing is that the ideas that I'm talking about are so new to my group, but I have to be very careful with them. That's why the last workshop was so helpful for me, because they're hearing the same ideas from somebody else's mouth, you know, and from lots of people, and that helped me enormously in my feeling of security in my own group. So actually that might have helped me a bit. It's difficult to see yet because it's only just happened half an hour ago. So. I think that might be quite helpful. because I could see Phil is somebody who gets quite defensive and has found, I've often felt as though he's left me alone.
Hmm.
And I could see him getting defensive a bit in that workshop. And I just think it must have been good for him to hear these ideas from somebody else. And maybe that will have shifted things a little bit.
So how should you deal with this privately? Like, how should your girlfriend deal with this, or outside the group?
Ricarda's in a very difficult position because she's a genetic scientist and she has to keep distance from the movement to keep her scientific credibility. But she wants to stay in touch with the movement and keep their respect. And it's she's treading a very fine line with them, because she needs to stay in touch with them. She wants them to make use of her as a friendly scientist. So she's found the situation very difficult, and she doesn't want to go to the same meetings as me and all this kind of thing, and for very good reasons, you know. And we, you know, it creates a tension between us a bit. I mean, we both we talk about it, and we both know that it's difficult for both of us. And I recognise her situation is difficult as well.
Do you have other people to talk with?
Anyone? I've talked a bit with Angie, but Angie's very thick-skinned. And I think she's probably had a lot of criticism in the past, but she just lets it wash over her. And she doesn't seem to need a peer group as strongly as I do. I feel like I need people around me. I need my support.
What about this idea about starting a bullying network, meeting once in a while? Do you think that would work or help you? With other activists, I'm not talking about.
I'd be quite interested in trying to start something like that with other people. I don't feel confident to speak about my own situation yet. I wouldn't feel able to mention it.
In a group like that, or
maybe in a closed group of other people who've been bullied. But I've had a bad experience with that already, actually, because I talked to somebody else who I thought had been bullied. And in fact, she then, a few months later, was doing very strange things behind my back. So that backfired.
So you need some kind of trust and agreement and then some kind of a secrecy.
Yeah, it would have to be closed, and there'd have to be enough people, I think, so that, I don't think it works. You know, a one-to-one thing doesn't work. I wouldn't feel safe enough, but maybe with a small group, I might feel safe enough to talk about it.
Okay, what about the issue about publishing this in the Swedish Plaucha magazine, or whatever, what do you think? From what you have said.
Yeah, I think because it would be in Swedish, and I don't suppose anybody in Britain would get to hear about it. That would probably be alright. But I wouldn't want any names. I mentioned Jackie. I wouldn't want her name to be mentioned. Yeah.
No names from other people. Could I mention your name? Or part of your name, like first name, whatever.
Well, there's only one Rowan.
Yeah, but I mean,
in the environmental movement.
No, but if other people, Swedish people, read about it, they can't.
They can't come back to me.
No, they can't. Then they wouldn't know who ruined, but we would know.
Yeah.
But you have to decide yourself.
Yeah, I think go for it. Go for it. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you see, I want to expose it.
Mm.
You know, I really want to expose it. I think it's awful that this is happening. And maybe some of it is my paranoia, but the only way I can find that out is by discussing it with people.
Mm.
And there's no, I can't. You know, well, I have a little bit, but I still feel censored and I still feel unable to speak about it.
Mm.
And I think that that should be exposed.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention or before you finish? Add or what I've forgotten to ask about, whatever.
No, I think that's it.
Thank you.
What are you going to do with it?
I might write an article for the Plowshare magazine. Because this is a question we need to deal with in Sweden too. We have written about it now in the spring, about bullying inside the movement. This interview might help to make that question more concrete, specific, you know. Because the other article was more about the mechanism behind and how it hided and like that. This is more like a personal witness about what's happening and what you think about it. You could mention a little bit more if you have time to, like, the mechanism in how you yourself, like censor your thoughts, your interpretation of it, or how it's how long time did it take before you start to think about it as oppression or bullying or and that kind of mechanism?
Okay, right.
A little bit, if you want.
Yeah, I saw there's been a very controversial series on TV recently about bullying in schools, and I watched some of them, and I just thought, that's what's happening. That's the way.
When was that?
About 4 or 5 months ago.
Just say a month.
Oh, about, I think it was about August last year.
That's 97 then.
Yeah.
And when did this started?
When did the bullying start?
Yeah, for you, you know, when?
January 97.
So it took you half a year to recognize it as bullying?
Yeah.
So what kind of mechanism made it took that long time to recognize it as bullying? Why did you?
I think the isolation, you know, because it was just me. I just sit and cry about it, you know. I just, the feelings are so overwhelming that I couldn't begin to analyze what was happening. I suppose, yeah.
Anything else which would... Do you feel guilt about it, or...?
Yeah, I felt guilt about the first angry comment that I made.
Why? Do you still feel guilt about that comment?
I feel mixed. When I'm... Okay, whilst here... No, I don't, because at Hope and Resistance, criticism is encouraged and welcomed. I think it's a healthy thing. And I think to have a dialogue like that behind closed doors is really good and really constructive. And that's what I was trying to do. And sometimes release of anger can... well, it just gets everything out in the open, and once you've had your angry outburst, then you can start to get coherent and explain things clearly and have a discussion about it.
But what about that time?
Well, it was never possible.
Yeah, but I mean more about what do you think, like, about guilt, you know?
About the guilt?
Yeah. Well, did you have the right to be angry or not?
Yes, I think I did.
So it's... But you feel guilt anyway? party.
So. I think I've been made to feel guilty a little bit by my own group. I think they're critical of what I've said, because partly because it brings it's brought some attention on them as well, you know.
So do you think it's a moral connection between your anger and the bullying? Is it any? Is it your fault somehow, the bullying, because that you were angry? Is it any?
Well, it may be that I'm taking a victim role, I suppose, but I don't think so. I'm not. I mean, as I said, I've never been bullied at school. I've actually fought against bullying. I've successfully resisted bullying when I've been at school. So I don't think I'm a victim person. I think I'm quite a strong, powerful person. That's possibly part of the problem, because I am powerful and people are threatened by that.
But do you think you have the right to be powerful? Or?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah. Right, I have just realised that I have had a strategy for trying to deal with the situation. And the main strategy has been to try and get some open discussion, which is why I wanted this discussion to have happened at the Earth First gathering, for example. And so wherever I've seen an opportunity for discussion, I've tried to jump on it as an opportunity to unpick publicly and be able to discuss what's happened. And I was approached by...
What happened? Do you mean... are you talking about? Do I talk about the bullying or the question about openness and secrecy?
The fact that I accused the newbie people of being agent provocateurs. You know, that and all the issues around covert and accountability. I was approached by Newsnight, which is a very high-profile news program, to talk about accountability. And I thought, great. I was excited about it, and I said I'd do it. And then when I was talking to them about how the program was going to run, they said, "Oh, we're trying to find someone to talk about covert action. Do you have any ideas?" So I made a few suggestions, and then I put the phone down, and then I thought, I should try and find out who they're going to pick and discuss with him beforehand, otherwise we could get ourselves into a mess. So I asked them who it was, and basically, to cut a long story short, they found somebody, but they were trying to stop us from communicating with each other. And what they were trying to do was set us up in debate with each other. And because I realised what was going to happen, and it was a live debate, I made lots of efforts to get in touch with him, and eventually tracked the person down, and we had a very useful discussion, and prepared ourselves for the debate. And also, before they'd found him, they'd tried a couple of other people, and they'd turned it down. And when I asked them, they said, I was told not to trust you. One person said that he'd been advised by someone not to trust me, and therefore not to go into that situation. And he also advised me not to take part in it. But then after I'd prepared it all with the person that was going to do it, I said to him, I think you should be very careful, and I think, you know, you should consider possibly not doing it. But he said, no, I'm confident. So we did it. And we were able to short circuit what they were doing, and both of us came across as good, you know, quite well. We have both had quite a good public image, although perhaps I wasn't as strong as I could have been, because I didn't want to say anything that would make him look bad. And we were strongly criticised for it by the movement.
Both of you, or you?
I think both of us, but me more than him. Even though I think we did a really good job of not allowing them to you know, they tried to portray him as a terrorist guerrilla bit, basically, and we were able to prevent that from happening, and I think that was really good. So I've tried to use these situations to make people realise that I'm not going to trash them in public. I want to have a discussion with them in private. I'm not going to grasp them or, you know, and I've gone out of my way to make that clear.
Okay. Just a short evaluation of the interview. Mm-hmm. What did you think about the interview?
It's good actually to talk about it. To somebody that hasn't been involved. Although it makes me feel a bit emotional. Yeah, I mean it sort of brings it down. It makes me sort of realise what a mess it is and makes me think about how I can try and sort it out.
Mm-hmm. What about the gender issue? I'm a man and you're a woman.
It's not, hasn't been a problem.
My questions have were they pushing you in a specific direction if you didn't realize or didn't want it? Or
I don't think so. I think I was so wrapped up in my emotions that I might not have realized if you were. You probably could have manipulated the situation and I wouldn't have noticed because of the. Because of my feelings about what I was talking about, but I it's probably because I already trust you and I already know you that I allowed myself to do that. So I probably wouldn't have been so open with anybody else probably. And also the fact that you're from Sweden, not from England, makes me feel safer.
If you look back at the interview. Have you? Would you see any manipulation or anything like that from this point? From now, you know. If you're
right. I don't think so. Because you told me what it was. You know, I'd forgotten, but you had said before we started the interview that it was for a magazine. So I already, you know, I already, because I want to expose what's happening and because I want bullying to be dealt with, I wanted to say what I've said.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Thanks.